The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is a timely, downloadable resource designed for Bible classes. It's titled Called to Vote, A Christian's Approach to Elections. Called to Vote is written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb. You can find out more and download Called to Vote on every page of our website, issuesetc.org. Called to Vote, A Christian's Approach to Elections, The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, issuesetc.org.
I try to practice my religion in a very devout way and follow the teachings of my church in my own personal life. But I don't believe in this nation, a First Amendment nation, where we don't raise any religion over the other and we allow people to worship as they please, that the doctrines of any one religion should be mandated for everyone. But I think it is really, really important that those of us who have deep faith lives don't feel like we can just substitute our own views for everybody else in society, regardless of their views.
I appreciate and I have a great deal of respect for Senator Kaine's sincere faith. I truly do.
That's shared.
But for me, I would tell you that for me, the sanctity of life proceeds out of the belief that that ancient principle that where God says, before you were formed in the womb, I knew you. And so for my first time in public life, I've sought to stand with great compassion for the sanctity of life.
Those are the vice presidential candidates, Tim Kaine and Mike Pence, talking about their personal faith and public life during last night's vice presidential debate. Well, these things are usually chalked up to just a one-night event that doesn't matter that much, but this presidential election has not been typical in any way. So did it matter more to the Clinton camp or to the Trump camp, that vice presidential debate last night? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 5th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us. And Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, will join us to talk about the vice presidential debate last night. Father Mitch Pacwa joins us after that. He's host and guest of several radio and television programs for EWTN. We're going to talk about the growing popularity among Christians of an allegedly ancient personality typing system called the Enneagram. You may have heard about it from your pastor. You should be wary. We'll find out why with Father Pacwa a little bit later. Then Dr. Christian Kopp joins us. We're going to talk about our time spent in English literature. For most people, it was, they were just trying to get through it and hoping they didn't have to write too big of a term paper. But there are challenges presented to the Christian mind and to the Christian faith, even in the English Literature 101 class. We'll find out what they are and how to respond in part three of our series on classroom apologetics. Then listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. We'll round off these 2 hours. You can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions and your comments. 1-877-623-MYIE is our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about last night's vice presidential debate, Mark Hemingway, a regular guest and senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always glad to be back.
To which camp was last night's debate more important, to the Clinton camp or the Trump camp?
Well, clearly it was more important to the Trump camp. They're down in the polls. Trump had a disastrous first debate, and there have been a torrent of bad media stories for Trump in the news over the past week or so since the last debate. So they needed something, anything that would sort of put a stop to all of this anti-Trump momentum in the news cycle. And a strong debate performance by Mike Pence, and it was a very strong debate performance. I think most observers agree that he won the debate, and it wasn't particularly close. Kaine had a very bad performance and, interrupted constantly in a way that was unbecoming. But at the end of the day, while it may help a little bit around the margins, does winning in Veep debates really matter that much? I mean, it was the lowest rated vice presidential debate since the year 2000. And historically, these things just haven't mattered much. Arguably, the single most memorable event of the 1988 campaign was Lloyd Benson staring down Dan Quayle and saying, "You're no Jack Kennedy," in the vice presidential debate. But did it have any effect on the race whatsoever? It did not.
Okay, one thing I think people, the general observer, wherever they fall in the political spectrum, might have sensed in that debate last night was a little oasis of, some would say sanity, other would just say basic adult behavior from two candidates that we haven't been getting from the heads of the tickets. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, both Trump and Clinton, as we pointed out multiple times on your show, are the two most single disliked presidential candidates in modern history, and they happen to be running against each other. So by that metric, I think in terms of general appeal and in terms of their, you know, personal and political records, both Pence and Tim Kaine are vastly more appealing than Trump and Clinton. Now, granted, that's clearing a low bar in some respects, but Rich Lowry, the editor of National Review, tweeted out during the debate last night that this debate sounds like a Republican debating a Democrat. And it was very sort of reassuring in that sense, that it was sort of a return to form, a return to the sort of politics of more normalcy that we've come to expect, that have been totally abandoned in a crazy race between two very corrupt candidates.
What was Tim Kaine's goal last night, do you think?
Well, I think he had a couple of goals. I mean, one is that he had to remind voters that Donald Trump was at the top of the ticket, not Mike Pence, because, you know, Mike Pence, like I said, is more appealing than Donald Trump to a lot of voters. So you can see he did that. I don't think he did it particularly well. It sounded like he was just randomly dumping opposition research throughout the debate, and the interrupting didn't help to constantly be pointing out these bad things about Donald Trump. And secondarily, his job was to introduce Tim Kaine to a national audience. Polls show that still a vast majority, a large majority of American, I don't know if it's a majority, but a large percentage of the American population still don't really have a clear idea who either Tim Kaine or Mike Pence are. So they both had to sort of present themselves for the first time to a national audience, because they're both sort of, you know, regional or politicians. And I don't think Kaine did a particularly good job there. I mean, he came off as very haughty, and constant interruptions were very off-putting, I think.
What was Mike Pence's goal last night?
Well, his goal was to basically brush off the attacks on Donald Trump and go on the offensive. In the last debate, Donald Trump was on the defensive for much of the debate, and the moderator did not ask a single specific question about any of Hillary Clinton's scandals. So Mike Pence had to come to that stage prepared to bring the fight to Hillary and specifically talk about, you know, things like her email scandal, the Obama administration's national security record that she was a part of, and the problems therein. And I think he actually did that pretty effectively. On the national security front in particular, I mean, he was very good at pointing out that, Americans are understandably anxious about foreign policy around the world and how it relates to terrorism in the U.S., and Hillary Clinton was a major architect of the Obama administration's foreign policy, and Tim Kaine did a terrible job of defending it. I mean, I think five times during the debate, he made this astounding claim that Hillary Clinton had been, you know, had helped get the Iran deal off the ground, and that the Iran deal had, quote, eliminated Iran's nuclear weapons program. It is simply not true by any stretch of the imagination. So he just really seemed on the defensive, and I think Pence actually did a good job of, in some cases he had to outright deny things that Trump said that were troubling, you know, and that has its problems, obviously, in terms of speaking to Trump and Pence's own honesty. But as a debating tactic, he was very good at brushing aside the attacks on Trump and taking the fight to Clinton.
I'm wondering about Mike Pence. Did he achieve another, perhaps, sub-goal here? And that is, the head of his ticket, Donald Trump, does notoriously poorly with college-educated women. And I wonder if Mike Pence might have attracted some of them, with not only with his demeanor, but with kind of just the more adult behavior.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think certainly Pence wanted to do that, and he wanted to, present the face of Republicans. If the Republican Party going forward is going to be, you know, a coalition of this Trumpian populism grafted onto an older, more traditional conservative agenda, Pence is a pretty well positioned to be the guy that sort of leads that charge. And he may even be thinking ahead to the next election. You know, he was rumored to be a serious presidential candidate this time around and was not. So I think Pence very much wanted to come across as the adult in the room, like you say. And I think in a lot of ways he did that. He was very substantive on policy. And he was very reserved and he seemed very sober and thoughtful. The only problem was, like I said, he had to basically pettifog and or outright deny all of the things that, you know, Trump has said as a member of the, as the guy at the top of the ticket. And, you know, that wasn't terribly becoming, and it wasn't, you know, something that I would envy anyone in that position who had to do it.
As we heard coming into the program, matters of faith did come up as a formal subject in this debate. How would you summarize it?
Well, it was very interesting. This was brought up at the end of the debate, and part of the reason it was brought up is because Tim Kaine has a reputation of being one of the rare Democrats who is very sincere about his faith. He talks a lot about being Catholic and how that informs his job as a politician. His parents were missionaries. This is very much central to who Tim Kaine is. Part of the reason why he was successful in Virginia, which is kind of a purple state, was that his, you know, ability to talk about faith really appealed to a lot of people, I think, that weren't otherwise, you know, rock solid, you know, Democratic voters. And so at the same time, Pence is very outspoken as well. I believe he was raised Catholic and now he's some sort of evangelical. So it was, you know, a good opportunity for the two men to discuss the role of religion in public life, coming at it from two very different perspectives. Again, it was interesting, and Kaine was very happy to talk about it, and to some extent he does seem very comfortable talking about faith. He's able to ably quote scripture and things like that, but at the same time I don't think he particularly benefited from the conversation, which focused mostly on abortion. Pence did a very good job, and he's very passionate about pro-life issues, of presenting that case, and Tim Kaine basically made a very, you know, bizarre argument that even though he's very sincere about his faith, this leads him not to impose his religion on other people when it comes to matters like abortion, which is an odd argument to make as a Christian, and certainly, Todd, you're more qualified to speak about the theological aspects of that than I am, but it's not strictly a theological argument either. You know, part of the reason why we oppose abortion is that, you know, we view it as murder, and there's a reason why there are secular laws that have nothing to do with religion that do oppose murder. So this idea that you believe in legal abortion because you don't want to impose your religion on people is just fallacious, and I think a lot of Christians who might be wooing would completely see through that.
Did the issue of religious liberty emerge last night in the debate, in particular with regard to Mike Pence's kind of mixed track record there in his home state?
You know, I don't recall it emerging at all. I mean, if it did, it did not emerge in any significant way, which is very sort of interesting. And this is one thing, you know, I have to say that has always given me pause about Pence, because he handled that situation very poorly. I do not doubt that his convictions are quite sincere and that he believes in religious liberty. It's just that he just didn't handle the blowback well at all. And if you look at similar controversies that have gone down since then, where you have, you know, governors in North Carolina and Mississippi and Arkansas, on other places standing firm on these issues where Pence folded, it's really kind of shocking because, you know, Arkansas and North Carolina, particularly, even though they have Republican governors, are guys that aren't seen as nearly as rock-ribbed conservatives as Pence claimed to be, or even as sincerely religious as Pence claims himself to be, and yet somehow they remain firm on religious liberty issues where Pence caved to public pressure from corporations outside the state and all kinds of other things that were going on. So I think, honestly, it's probably to Pence's benefit, both because it would have reminded a lot of Christians that he did not perform well in that situation on an issue that he allegedly cared about as a man of faith, and also because there's a certain center-left, you know, liberal perspective that, you know, simply doesn't understand these issues and thinks that religious liberty laws are, you know, just a tool of homophobia, which is patently untrue.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about last night's vice presidential debate. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about something that always is a subject of the debate. Rather than those sitting at the table engaged in the debate, there's also the moderator. We'll discuss that with Mark after this. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is a timely, downloadable resource designed for Bible classes. It's titled Called to Vote, A Christian's Approach to Elections. Called to Vote is written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb. You can find out more and download Called to Vote on every page of our website, issuesetc.org. Called to Vote, A Christian's Approach to Elections, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, issuesetc.org.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office. 314-416-8117.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Reviewing a little bit of last night's vice presidential debate with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard. In that vein, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is a great guide for your Bible class, very timely as well. It's called Called to Vote by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb, walking through basically the nexus of the Christian faith and your life as a citizen in the American Republic. It's called Called to Vote, and it's downloadable at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. Mark, let's talk a little bit about the messaging that may have either been helped or hindered by these vice presidential candidates. They're obviously proxies for the head of the ticket. There's no doubt about that in these debates. Let's start with Pence. Did he clarify what has at times been an kind of all over the map Trump platform, so to speak?
I don't think he necessarily clarified a lot of the confusing positions that Trump had. And in some cases, particularly on the Russia issue, where Trump appears to be very cozy with Russian, with comfortable with Vladimir Putin, and a lot of people surrounding Trump seem to be overly comfortable and maybe have even business relationships with Putin cronies. He actually sort of distanced himself from the top of the ticket, which was sort of interesting, and a lot of people made a big deal out of that, understandably. But what Pence did do was very much clarify a theme that Trump sort of fainted in this direction in the last debate, but he got so bogged down in defending himself from Hillary Clinton's attacks that it sort of got lost. And that is a theme that sort of right track, wrong track. I mean, if you believe that things are good in America right now, then, you know, you should vote for Hillary Clinton. But most people in America don't believe that things are good, and so they need to vote for somebody that represents a break from the current administration that has had all kinds of foreign policy problems and is still, you know, in the driver's seat during, you know, the worst recession recovery since World War II. So Pence constantly hit that theme. You know, look, if you think things are good, you know, you can vote for for Hillary. But, you know, I can tell you right now that people out in America don't believe that. And Kane got really defensive about this, part of the reason why he was constantly defending Hillary Clinton's rotten foreign policy record. At the same time, the Clinton campaign has frankly been kind of lazy about putting forward a positive agenda. They spent so much time attacking Trump that most Americans aren't familiar with any sort of grand policy plans that they have, or, you know, any sort of big, you know, picture ideas that they've been putting out there. So, Kane, it would have been an opportunity for Kane to do that, but he didn't really do it. He just, you know, defended Hillary Clinton's record, and I don't think that was terribly effective.
The Clinton platform, again, so to speak, has, in a nutshell, been at least perceived as more of the same, as you just said here. Was that clearly communicated? We're going to stay the course in George Bush speak from Tim Kaine?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's sort of the underlying message. The Clintons are in between a sort of a rock and a hard place. On one hand, there are all these big picture issues like foreign policy and the economy that are that are part of the Obama legacy that's sort of dragging their candidacy down. But at the same time, Obama himself is so personally popular among certain minority groups and other things like that they're courting and depending on to turn out in November that they're very reticent to distance themselves from Obama sort of definitively. But we may have actually reached a breaking point. Obamacare sort of came up in the debate, but a big issue as of late has been Bill Clinton went out there and said Obamacare was, quote, crazy and that it wasn't working and was hurting small business owners and all this and all these things, which a lot of people just said, whoa, we can't believe, you know, Bill Clinton went out there and attacked Obamacare. And then today, Chelsea Clinton said something like, we need to work on the affordable part of the Affordable Care Act. So it's sort of signaling the Clinton campaign, like, knows that they're in a situation where they're in trouble and they have to put forward some sort of agenda that breaks with the Obama administration and will get sort of more middle America behind them in the sense that they can feel that they recognize Clinton knows that things need to change.
How was the moderation in this particular debate?
You know, there's a big argument to sort of be had about the general format of debates. I mean, to be perfectly honest, the way the last few debates have gone and number of debates have gone in the last number of election cycles, there's an argument that maybe we should just even get rid of moderators, you know, for all of the good that they do, and they often do very little speaking. Last night, I thought the moderator did more or less fine in terms of the question selection was actually good, and she, unlike Lester Holt, who again asked Hillary Clinton absolutely no substantive questions about any of her personal scandals, which is just astonishing to think about, she did ask direct questions about problems with the Clinton record as well as Trump's. So, she did fine in that regard. On the other hand, Kane was so prone to interruptions that she just got steamrolled. I mean, I think that's on Kane, but still, it was a very difficult debate to moderate, and I just don't know whether these kinds of, you know, this kind of format is always the most beneficial for people understanding the issues.
Did this debate, I mean, what really matters here are essentially states' poll numbers. Did this move the chains for either candidate, do you think, or will it?
It's too early to tell. We haven't really seen any polling. Like I said at the beginning, the reality is this is the lowest rated debate in four election cycles. Deep debates historically just haven't mattered as much. I mean, the entire office of the vice presidency, I forget which vice president famously compared it to, you know, said it wasn't worth a warm bucket of spit. I just don't know if Americans care that much about the vice presidency. They only cared in 2008 because of Sarah Palin, and the media made that an issue because that was the one week of the campaign cycle after they selected Sarah Palin where McCain actually looked like he had a shot of winning and actually rose above Obama significantly in certain polls. So that was the only reason why there was a focal point on her. But historically, vice presidents just haven't mattered that much in voters' minds.
Finally here, Mark, what should we expect from now that the single vice presidential debate is history? What should we expect from the next meeting of the two principals?
That is a really good question. It's Donald Trump, so I think you should not expect to have a well, you know, heeled candidate up on stage, and certainly that, you know, is going bound to throw Hillary Clinton for a loop. The only question is whether or not Donald Trump is going to have learn from his mistakes. There was a lot of reports that Donald Trump didn't take preparation for the first debate very seriously, and whether or not the plunge in the polls and the, you know, blanket condemnation from the media about his performance will in any way affect him, and whether or not he's buckled down and he'll be more disciplined in the next debate. I mean, he actually, I would say, a lot of observers thought Donald Trump won the first 20, 30 minutes of that debate, but by the end he'd had so many bad moments, it was just, it looked really terribly, and it showed up in the polls. So I think if Trump realizes that if he takes the fight to Hillary Clinton, doesn't get bogged down in defending the crazy things he's said and done, he can actually perform quite well in the debate. He just has to not take Hillary Clinton's bait when it comes to attacking him personally and attacking his business record.
And being the front runner with about 20 seconds, what does she got to do in the next debate?
I think she has to do more of the same. She needs to get inside his head and, you know, get Trump to take the bait, because that's an easy thing to do, and it worked for her at the last debate.
You can follow Mark Hemingway on Twitter at Heminator. That's H-E-M-I-N-A-T-O-R. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Always happy to be here.
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the growing popularity among Christians of an ancient, it's not an ancient personality typing system. It's actually an allegedly ancient personality typing system called the Enneagram. You might have seen this. I was actually perusing Lutheran church websites, a Google search of Enneagram, which just means a five-pointed diagram, and Lutheran churches, and I found a lot of Lutheran churches that are recommending it, that are using it, that are putting it into use. Kind of odd that Christians would be drawn into something like this. We'll find out the appeal with Father Mitch Pacwa, host and guest of several radio and television programs for EWTN, right after this.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
I'm Pastor Todd Rappe. I serve a congregation here in Fayetteville, North Carolina, our Redeemer Lutheran Church, a sister congregation of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. All of the saints here gather around blood, water, and spirit as theologians of the cross every Sunday morning at 10:30. We only welcome sinners. We certainly would welcome you. If you'd like to contact us through our website, you may do so at faylcms.org.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to, you know, help them to get a sense of, A, you know, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The the best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.